Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome. So happy that you're here. So happy you joined us for this episode of The Cosmic Connection. Today, we are going to be talking about solar returns. Rick just celebrated his birthday last week. So this is in honor of Rick's birthday celebration. So everyone, please wish Rick a happy birthday. But also, we just want to explore this topic of solar return. Because I don't know about you, Rick. Well, probably not you. But I always get a reading on my birthday every year. And I'm always sort of indifferent when the astrologer says, do you want me to do a solar return reading? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really know what technique you're going to use. Just tell me about the year ahead. So what's your opinion in terms of solar returns? Is this an accurate technique in your experience or not?
I wish I could just answer this with a yes, no, but we have an hour to kill, you know? So
you never answer with a yes, no. So what are you even talking about?
It's the problem with a with a hyperactive Gemini ascendant. I happen to own one. So
yes.
Yes, no becomes an hour filled with words. So here's the deal. When we astrologers look at a chart or have a client, we have choices to make by what tools we use, because there are more tools available to us in a typical astrologer's toolbox than could possibly be integrated into a 1 hour. I mean, there's probably 60 different tools that I just pulled that number out of the air, because literally using one new tool a minute, one could still not use up all the tools that were available. So my rule of thumb is that I do not run solar returns unless I happen to see a client within a few days before, at, or after their birthday. And then I usually run it because it's the chart of the moment aside from the chart of their solar return. And however, I remember being a kid, and my parents' famous line, which never really cut it with me, was, don't do as I do, do as I say. Well, I'm telling people to not do as I do and to do as I say. And what I say is use whatever works for you. And if a solar return works for you, and we'll talk about it, you know, why it does or can work, it's just not at the height of the tools. In a limited amount of time, I find I have better tools. Now, again, I need to be clear. There are astrologers whose work I totally value, who wouldn't think of doing a client's chart without using the solar return for that year. And solar returns are really just one type of planetary returns. And I think that that's important to understand, because a solar return is the most obvious of returns. Why? Because every year on our birthday, from Earth's point of view, the sun is back in the same place, which is, the sun hasn't moved, really. I mean, you know, with respect to going around the Earth, but it looks like that. And so the solar return is a birthday chart. Now, we have Mercury returns and Venus returns and Mars returns and Jupiter returns, and of course, the infamous Saturn return. And with Uranus, because it's 84 years, many people don't make it to their Uranus return, but many people make it to their halfway point, which is the Uranus opposition, which is an important point. And these are all things that occur independent of what our sign is. It's about the rhythms of the planets themselves. And so when a planet comes back to where it was when we were born, it is a special moment, in as much as it's the cosmos chance to re-zap us with the energy that we were zapped with when we were born.
Okay. First of all, I want to ask everyone in the audience a question, especially those who do look at charts. Do you run solar return charts, and or have you had a solar return reading, and how accurate do you find them to be? Like, just curious. Now, Rick, what I hear you saying is that there's validity in it because it's sort of reinforcing the birth chart. But what I'm also hearing you say is that it might not have predictive powers in the sense that it might not really be like setting the tone for the year ahead.
Well, I'm not convinced that it doesn't.
Okay.
Really. I mean, I run my solar return chart every year, you know, and I look at it and it's never quite overwhelming in its importance. If it's a year, let's say, when I have transiting Saturn squaring my natal moon three times that year, whether or not that's in my solar return chart, that's going to be really potent for me. And that seems to overstate or overwhelm the solar return energy. However, I'm not saying that the chart doesn't have use or validity. My belief is it has more use and validity tied to a custom that is so ingrained in our culture that it just becomes part of our solar return cultural mythology, apparently having nothing to do with astrology at all. And that's the idea that from being a child at maybe age 3 or 4, we begin this custom of on our birthday anniversary. It's not really our birthday. You know, how many birthdays does the average, you know, person have in their lifetime? One. We only have one birthday, but we celebrate it every year on its anniversary to the sun. The point is, what I'm talking about is the ritual of lighting candles, making a wish, and then blowing out the candles. This, I believe, tells us a whole lot about the solar return, because I believe that the solar return is more useful from the standpoint of making intentions, stating intentions, ritualizing intentions, and then having that moment be part of what our year is ahead. And of course, when I was talking about all the planetary returns, I didn't mention a lunar return, which happens once every month. And in fact, even the new moon, which is like a lunar return to the sun, every month on the new moon, we do what? We focus our energy and we make intentions. And I think this is really what the useful piece of a solar return is about. It's about making intentions. It's about stating intentions.
Okay. And you're saying there's a lot of other opportunities where we can do that too. I mean, essentially, the new moon every month is a perfect time to set intentions. But the act of having a ritual in your life, where if it's your birthday every year, to really reflect on the past, clear about what you want to do in the future, that there's power in that.
Hey, waking up every morning and stating your intentions is a good idea. But yeah. The problem is that just stating them doesn't do anything. That stating them is, it's a good idea, but it's just an idea. We have to do something to make it happen. And there's two things that are important here. One is the act of ritual, which we'll come back to in a moment. And the other is, once we state our intention, it can never be fulfilled if we hold on to that intention, which anyone who's done any form of ritual, witchy ritual, any sort of anything, knows that when you begin some sort of ritualistic ceremony, what do? You light a candle. Why? Because that can help focus our energy. And when we're done with the ritual, what do? Well, we don't blow it out, we snuff it out, but we take that candle and we end that candle. Why? Because that releases the energy of the closed circle of stating the intention so that it can be fulfilled. There's a wonderful book, which I may have mentioned here on earlier conversations. I tend to mention it a lot. And that is a book called Zen and the Art of Archery. And it really is not about archery at all. And I think that it's a book that is an academic textbook about Zen and what Zen actually is. And I think the concept here is that one can never achieve the state of enlightenment or of Zen any more than one can achieve the state of an arrow hitting a target until one releases the arrow. And that is the significant thing. That is, you know, back in the 1960s, when the CIA was actually 60s and 70s, when the CIA was spending quite a bit of money on remote viewing and telepathy, trying to figure out, you know, how they could use this thing that seems to be actually accurate. The CIA and Americans in general, going back to J.B. Rhine at Duke University, who did work on telepathy back even in the 50s, in the United States, we focused on someone who's telepathic is someone who could send the message. Meanwhile, in the then Soviet Union, the focus was more on, I got that backwards. In the United States, it was on the receiver, that someone who was telepathic could receive the messages. And the Soviets during that same era focused on what it took to send the message. And what they discovered was something that was very interesting. And that is that when people tried to send a message or what card they were looking at or a color or imagining something, the message couldn't be sent until the sender began clearing their mind and no longer trying to send it. That somehow it was the moment of the mind going blank that was like the archer who was aiming and aiming and aiming and holding back the tension on the bow. It wasn't until it was released that allowed it to go. And the same is true when it comes to intentions. And therefore, the act of making a wish as a child and blowing out the candles is really a much deeper issue than just making some frivolous wish, like I want to get a Nintendo set for my birthday when I open gifts. It's more about stating an intention, focusing on that intention, and then releasing it. So I really think that that is the highest use of looking at someone's solar return chart, looking at the chart, trying to understand the chart, and then stating intentions around what one sees in the chart itself. And I think that's the most important way to look at solar return charts.
Okay. So what about other planetary returns?
I think that those are important too, but let me just go back and clear up one other thing about solar return charts.
Yes.
Because from an issue of actually creating solar return charts, there's a few tricky things and things that are discussed when astrologers get together and geek out over technical issues. With a solar return chart, I was born in the Bronx, New York. Do I run my solar return chart for the Bronx? Or do I run my solar return chart for Redmond, Washington, outside of Redmond, which is where I live? Or do I run it for Portugal? Because I happen to have been in the Lisbon airport at the moment of my solar return, coming back from the Azores Islands, where I spoke last week at the Portuguese Astrology Association's International Conference. So there's three different charts, because a solar return chart is run for a specific moment. If you don't have an accurate birth time, forget about running a solar return. You could run something that would be close to it. But a solar return chart is the moment at which the sun in the sky reaches the same degree and same minute of degrees that the sun was at the moment you were born. And therefore, a solar return chart actually has an ascendant, a midheaven, and all the planets and whatever their configuration is, falls on a chart with an ascendant and midheaven. Meaning that if I move location, the chart is actually different, because it could be different between my solar return sun being in the first house if it happens around sunrise, or in the seventh house if it happens on the other side of the planet at sunset. So the question is, which of those three charts do I run? Now, my belief is that, or let me say what I actually use, I'm not really sure of what to believe here, but from what I've seen, I think that the solar return chart should be run for where you live, where you're going to be spending most of the year, what you call home. However, there are astrologers, there are well-known astrologers, people who know the community might even know who I'm talking about, but I'm not mentioning any names here. But there is an astrologer who's a very successful astrologer, has led a very successful life. And every year for at least the past 30 years, maybe longer, this person looks at their solar return chart for the upcoming year. And based upon what this person wants to happen in their year ahead, looks at their solar return chart from different places on the planet. And then physically, every year on this person's birthday, gets on an airplane or in a car, but usually it's an airplane because it's far away, and goes and spends 2 or 3 days at some place on the planet to create a solar return moment that actually is in line with what this person has stated as their intentions for the year ahead. Now, this works apparently quite well for this person who is able to do that. But I've had deep discussions with this person, and I'm not convinced that it's necessary to get on an airplane and go to Greece or to China or to Buenos Aires, or though some of these places might be lovely places to go for a few days. However, I think the act of spending time and looking at all the charts and creating the set of intentions around how you want to use the energies that are appearing in your solar return chart, and even adjusting them so that they're in the right houses. And what about instead of going to Greece, what would happen if you instead created the ritual of cooking a Greek dinner? Or instead of going someplace, actually creating your intention around that place. Is it necessary to go there? I don't know. This person claims that it sets it in stone because, as my friend Caroline Casey says, the gods don't speak English. When you state an intention out loud in English, they don't understand English. And then parenthetically, she says, they don't even understand Spanish. The point, though, is they understand ritual. And with ritual, what we're doing is we're priming the pump. And getting on that airplane and going to some place is a form of committed ritual. And when we commit to a ritual, that makes it real. Does actually being in that spot? I don't know. Maybe it does, but I don't think so. And so from that standpoint, the question becomes, I look at my solar return chart, and I look at where it is, where I am or where I'll be. And then I think about, well, where would I like this to be? And then I create rituals around whatever that is that allows me to prime that pump to use that solar return in that manner. And I think that it's the committed engagement of simply thinking about what happened last year, where do I want to go next year, that on that moment of making the wish, and blowing out the candles, you know, ritualistically, whether we actually light a candle and blow it out or not, that is what I think is the higher ideal and the higher use, not only of a solar return, but any return. And so I needed to say all that before we kind of spread our wings and talked about other planetary or lunar returns.
I love how much, I mean, it's true about anything we do, right? If we put that much intention and energy behind something, it absolutely has that much more potential to either manifest or go the way we envisioned. I mean, we commit to it that fully. So I can see why that birthday thing works, but obviously it's impossible to do like a scientific analysis because you don't know what would have happened if you didn't go. Like, we'll never
and that's
know.
Really the both the beauty and the problem with astrology in general.
Yes.
Is that science is based upon repeatability, and you can't repeat the specific thing of something like that. There's just no way to. You either, you know, do it and you put faith in it, and maybe it's the faith that you put in it that helps manifest it. This is not, we don't know. We don't know.
Right. Okay, question for you, Rick. Can you give us an example, even maybe using your own solar return chart, or if you can think of an example of how one would do exactly what you just said? What would we look at in the chart? What would we look at in the solar return chart to identify themes or things that we could infuse into our intention? So when we blow out that candle, we have some tangible things.
Sure. Well, so because I was born on April 6th, this year, the solar return actually is often the day before, the day of, or the day after, because our calendar is sloppy. And so the sun actually returns to where it was when we were born, typically within 24 hours of our actual birth moment, or the sun's to return to that degree. And I think it actually is partly altered by whether or not it was a leap year as to how far away from our actual time it was. But this year, my birthday is on April 6th. And my solar return, depending on where you were, are in the planet, was either late on the night of April 5th or very early in the morning, like just after midnight on April 6th. Either way, when I looked at my solar return chart months ago for this coming year, I immediately realized that there was a full moon late on April 5th that was actually going to be my solar return chart. Full moon in Libra on April 5th was at 16 degrees of Libra, which is my sun at 16 degrees of Aries. Furthermore, I immediately recognized the fact that Chiron, which last fall and winter was direct across my sun in my chart, and then retrograded back over it, and now Chiron moving direct, the Sun Chiron conjunction occurred on, I think it was April 4th. Yeah, it was April 4th. So my solar return chart has a Sun Chiron conjunction. And on top of that, the sun is now, or on my birthday, was only 3 degrees away from its catching up to Jupiter. And so, because we just had we're recording this right now on April 13th, on April 12th, just yesterday, or 11th, depending on where you live on the planet, we had the sun conjuncting Jupiter. So a week ago on my birthday, there was a Chiron sun Jupiter conjunction. And so that became my point of focus. And this being my 74th solar return, certainly over the last years, I've been considering the fact that, hey, I'm not a kid anymore. You know, it's like, all right, face the fact. When people begin to call me elder or whatever, it's like, oh, crap, really? You know, but I have to say that as Chiron over last fall and winter kind of came across my sun transiting Chiron right now is at 15 degrees, actually. On my solar return day, it was at 15 degrees and 53 minutes. Right now, Chiron is at 16 degrees, 20 minutes, conjuncting or conjoining my sun, literally right there. So my year ahead, theoretically, needs to acknowledge and honor Chiron, which unfortunately often gets pegged as the wounded healer, rather than as the original mentor. You know, Chiron did have a wound, but all humans are wounded. That is our humanness. And yet when Chiron went direct and retrograde over my sun, I was realizing that as I grow older, that there were things that were kind of going out of whack in my body physically. I was not a hospital case. This was not anything that was acute, but there were chronic things that I had let slip. And I made a decision back around the beginning of this year to attend to some of these things so that by the time I reached my solar return, when Chiron was going to be exactly conjoining my sun, that maybe I would be on the right side of some of these issues. You know, and without going into great detail, you know, it's just typical blood chemistry stuff that, you know, between, you know, increasing blood pressure, increasing, you know, cholesterol, decreasing lipids, increasing this, didn't decrease, just all those things. Everything was just creeping slowly. And so, you know, the good news is that over the past 4 months, I've lost nearly 25 pounds because I've of body weight, because I've made a commitment, which was intention tied to ritual. Going to the gym is a ritual. You know, not eating as many carbs is a ritual. And so all I'm saying is, I don't know. I mean, I could still run into health problems tomorrow, next week, next month, you know, that goes along with aging. But I'd like to believe that it was the intentions around what I saw going on and aimed toward a solar return point, that now by the time my solar return week is over, I will theoretically hold this energy for a while. And, you know, Chiron is now past the sun, or it will be within, you know, within a few days or a week, and it's not going to retrograde back over that. Does that mean I have outsmarted reality? Does it mean I've done an end run around my karma? I don't know. We'll see if we're still talking in a year.
I love this so much. I mean, again, it's the level of intentionality that I think is powerful no matter what. And then aligning it with the astrological energies that are specific for you. There is absolute, it's like getting the wind in your sails. It's like, if you had tried to do that at a different time, it might not have been so fluid, and it sounds like it's been relatively easy for you to get on track. And there's probably been other times where you've tried to do that in your life where it felt like you're pushing a boulder up a hill.
Yeah. Or the boulder has been pushing me down there. No, that's exactly true. And again, some of this is also the fact that this whole thing for me really became, I mean, it was when Chiron was retrograding back over my sun, and I, back in last December, that I realized this is no joke. I need to deal with, I mean, if I'm enjoying life and would like to extend it, you know, another year or decade or two, I needed to do something about it. But at the same time, Jupiter was moving from Pisces into Aries. And those people who know me or know my chart know that I carry nearly over the legal limit of planets in Aries. It's actually my sun, Mercury, Venus, Mars, North Node, Black Moon, Lilith, Eris, and probably a handful of asteroids. Well, definitely. And so as Jupiter tipped into Aries, that was part of the statement of the hope and confidence of all of this. And we'll see what happens when Jupiter, you know, in May, slides out of Aries and into Taurus. And we'll see if we can keep this run going. But right now, you know, it's like someone has taken 12-pound weights off of each of my ankles, and I'm not done. You know, I have to say, though, that being in Portugal for a week last week, or a week to 2 weeks ago, I was able to put 5 pounds on my body in just 1 week because of the amazing carbohydrates, that is pastries, that were available to me. And so it's, and I've now in 1 week taken those off again.
Amazing.
You know, but that's what, you know, a combination of intention and follow through. And so in a way, you know, I'm an Aries. I'm really good at starting things. And I do have a Cancer moon, which does give that Aries some staying power. And my planet, Mars, and I'm not possessive around it when I say my planet, Mars. It could be your, I'm willing to share. But my planet, Mars, is in Cancer, which is my moon sign, which I think in some ways energizes that concept of giving this real staying power. And again, we'll see. You know,
well, we're
it surprised
all
me how quickly in Portugal I could forget about whatever my rules were and have fresh baked English muffins every morning for breakfast.
I mean, but the fact that you came back and you got right back on track, that's really impressive, because a slide like that could be like, you know, done. So that is really impressive. And you have a whole community of people supporting you, because we'd also like you around for a long time, right?
Well, okay. There you go.
Another thing. Okay, so we've talked about solar return. Love that.
Enough. Yeah.
That's great.
And again, I should say that when one looks at their solar return, like any other chart, you'd look at the moment of your solar return. If you don't have a moment, even on that day, what aspects is the sun making to other planets?
Okay.
What house does the solar return fall in, if in fact you have an accurate, you know, if you have accurate data? What are the closest aspects made in the chart itself? Gail, hi, Gail, is on the call or out there. And she said, Rick, when is your Mars return? Would that be part of the picture? Well, actually, Mars returns approximately just short of every 2 years, unless you're a Gemini, in which case you had a prolonged 7-month Mars return that was a 1-2-3 because of its crazy retrograde from last August all the way up through March, through February, February. Actually, it turned direct in January, but didn't move out of its shadow until March. Anyhow, my Mars return won't occur until Mars is back in Aries, which I don't know when that'll be, but it'll be about a year down the road. And so I don't know when that is offhand, when the next part of it is. Any planetary return is significant. And watching the planets to where they are when they return. And for that matter, Amanda, look, any planet is significant when it transits an aspect to a natal planet. And it's even more significant when it transits an aspect to itself in your chart. So when transiting Mars right now in the sky is coming toward conjoining my 16-degree Cancer moon, it's also going to square Mars. Mars will square its own place in just a few days, because right now Mars is at 9, almost 10 degrees of Cancer. And it looks like Mars will reach its square to my natal Mars next week, actually on April 18th. So energetically, whenever a transiting planet makes any aspect to itself in your natal chart, that's significant. But it's particularly significant, just like conjunctions are particularly significant. They are the loudest aspects. They are the first harmonic. They are the fundamental. And so whenever there's any planetary return, wherever your Venus is, I mean, anyone right now who has Mars in Cancer is going through a Mars return. And by next month, that Mars will be moving from Cancer into Leo. And then everyone who has Mars in Leo will be having a Mars return. Yes, these are significant. And yes, they can be looked at. And yes, you can do a chart for them. But the problem with doing planetary returns out past the moon or the sun is that they get slow enough in motion that there's, even if the computer can return an exact moment, it's beyond the margin of error. In other words, when does Saturn turn retrograde? Well, it turns retrograde, we might calculate a moment, a minute, but it's really stationary for hours before and after. And even a day or two before and after, it's barely moving. And so we lose the ability to create a planetary return with houses. By the way, there's one other thing that comes into mind when we're looking at planetary returns. And I know I brought this issue up when we talked about the United States' Pluto return because of this little problem called the precession of the equinox. And that is that the Earth has this wobble that makes it different from when a planet returns to where it was actually physically against the backdrop of stars versus when it looks like it reached the point that it was in our chart. And I don't want to delve deeply into this, but most computer programs, when you calculate a solar return, you can either calculate a regular solar return or a precessed solar return, which becomes further and further apart the older you get. You know, at 72 years, the difference between the two of them is one full degree. So You know, there's all these unknowns. And so, yes, we can look at these outer planetary returns. And of course, the most significant one that we look at, aside from our solar return, and many astrologers look at their lunar returns, but the most talked about one, of course, is the Saturn return. And Saturn return, because it's so slow moving, we rarely make a chart and call it our Saturn return chart, because you can't even pin it down to a day. Okay, you can pin it down to a day, but it's not totally accurate. And I'll tell you a quick story about my second Saturn return, because I knew when it was. I knew that Saturn was in late Leo and it had moved through and it was retrograding and direct. And that's a thing about many Saturn returns, is that they can last, you know, up to 8 or 9 months, depending upon Saturn's direct retrograde, direct motion. And then there are some people who experience a Saturn returning to where it was when they were born, that there's a direct retrograde direct here, and then it goes across the spot of the return, and then it does a direct retrograde direct here. So some people get their Saturn return, and you can calculate it. It's on June 19th, 2024, Saturn return. You know, and other people get it expanded over three different hits. That might be the first hit, you know, in February, then the second retrograde hit might be in June, and then the third direct hit might be in, let's see, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, in November. So you could have almost a whole year of that Saturn return. And so, and just while we're at it here, I know people who like complain, oh my God, I got this upcoming Saturn return, and it's going to be three times over 6 months or 8 months or whatever. This is awful. So-and-so just had their Saturn return and it was just one day. Boy, are they lucky. I think the exact opposite is the case. Often when we have a Saturn return that occurs with no retrograde direct, you know, back over that same point, it can turn our life upside down and backwards pretty damn quickly. It can be rather sudden and abrupt, and you know, and for other people that get it the three times, it can be a process, but boy, it's like, it gives us time to dig into it and make it right and to do what that Saturn return is really asking us to do. And in a moment, I want to come back and talk about how do we deal with the Saturn return, whether we're 27, 28, 29, 30, or whether we're in our mid-late 50s, or whether we're in our mid-late 80s, because the three Saturn returns can each be significant if we know what to do with them rather than just blindly fearing them.
Okay. So to back up, with our solar return, there are three things that we might want to look at in order to kind of grab some themes that help us focus our intentions. That is the aspects to the sun. That's also the house that the sun, that the conjunction is in, essentially. Not a real conjunction, right?
But, like, but the point at which the sun is conjoining our sun, that will, correct.
Yes. And then the third is the closest, any aspects in the chart that are really close to each other.
Yeah. And like any chart, you know, if there's a, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? A stellium, a density of pattern, you know, planets in a certain house, or what planetary pattern, you know, is going on? Is the planet, is the solar return a bowl? Is it a splay? Is it a splatter? Whatever the energy is of that moment, it's part of the potential of the focus of the intention that can be stated then consciously, or if not conscious, it's an intention that the universe gives us, whether we know it or not. But it may not be the most significant thing in the year, depending upon perfections, which is an annual perfection, which is also based on your birthday, or transits, you know, on your birthday or during the whole year, or secondary progressions, or solar arc directions. I mean, all the timing techniques that one uses are still all useful. And I don't think that the solar return overwhelms any of those
Okay. All right. So there's a lot of tools we can use. This is one tool we can use on our birthdays to get a sense for the energy ahead. But mainly what you're saying is the point of it is for intention setting.
Well, and again, that's my point. That doesn't mean that your astrology teacher or your astrologer is going to agree with me. And that's just perfect.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Now, in terms of other returns, we can do something similar, correct? Although what you're saying is that it's harder to pinpoint a moment, right? So the Saturn.
Exactly. We can. I know that during my Saturn return, my second Saturn return, I was actually on the phone with a good astrologer friend at this particular day. And she said to me, hey, I just called up your chart. You know that your Saturn return is today? Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, no, I knew I was in my Saturn return. But, you know, we astrologers don't necessarily follow our chart minute by minute. And I said, no, I said, I know I'm in my Saturn return, but I didn't realize it was exact today. Are you sure? She goes, yeah, I'm looking at the chart right now. Your Saturn is at 29 degrees, 51 minutes of Leo. And that's where Saturn is in the sky right now. What's going on? And I said, I'm just dealing with regular shit that I deal with always. And hang on, there's someone at the door. And I literally put her on hold. I set the phone down. It was actually a phone call. And I walked to the door and I opened the, and someone was knocking at the door. And I opened the door and the person said, excuse me, are you Rick Levine? And I said, yeah. And they said, you've been served. IRS.
Damn.
And I came back to the phone and I said, you know that question about what's going on my Saturn return? Boom, 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 boom. And I had to deal with it. I mean, and it worked out fine. But the point is that sometimes this shit is like so. I used to have an engineer who worked for us at Star IQ, and he had on his computer a little placard that said, you can't make this shit up.
Yeah, no. I know. So when things like that happen and it's so literal, I feel like we're in a program of code. And it's
Right. And it's like, it's like, it's so literal. That's what Saturn is, authority, you know?
Yes.
And someone says, was your Saturn return in the eighth house? The problem with a Saturn return is you can't give it. Well, actually you can, because my natal Saturn is in the fourth house. So the Saturn return was in the fourth house, but I could change house cusp systems, and in whole sign houses, it was in my third house. So I don't know.
But didn't you also say that when we run a return chart, we're running it for the location of where we're at?
Well, on a Saturn return chart, I don't think that a relocated chart is the chart that we use to understand what's going on. Astrologers, these are things that astrologers geek out on when they're together. When I look at the transits to my chart and to see what they're doing and how they're working, I use my natal chart for Bronx, New York. I do not use my chart for Redmond, Washington. I don't think one overtakes the other. I think it can influence it, and I think that it adds nuance, but I don't think that it replaces. I don't think that it replaces.
Okay. Well, we don't have too much time to go too far deeply into Saturn returns, which I feel like could be an episode on its own. Do you want to touch on what you were alluding to earlier? There's one question from Jane, and maybe we want to go in this direction. How is this much different from looking at daily transits every morning and setting intentions for the day, basically a personal ritual?
No, I think it's only different in its scale of timing. Grant Louis, one of my favorite astrologers, used to say that all planetary transits were the same. It was the timing that was different. And he used an example that I've kind of extended. But it's, let's say you have a friend who comes over once a month and comes over for dinner in the evening, and you play a game of chess, you have a glass of wine, and they go home. And this is a ritual that you do once every month or so, and it goes and goes. And every month the person comes over, you have dinner, you play a game of chess, have a glass of wine, and they leave. And one month the same person comes over, has dinner, you play a game of chess, you have a glass of wine, and they stay for a year, and then they leave. It's the same it's the same energetic dynamic, but it impacts us very differently. I mean, if you wake up some morning and over your newspaper or iPad, you look at your partner having coffee with you and you go, oh my God, what did I do? And you put your face back in the iPad and you go, oh, I'm sure it'll be okay. I'm just having a bad morning. I really love it. But if that same thing goes on day in, day out for weeks and months, you're not in a bad moon or mood. You're in a bad Mars or Saturn. Mm-hmm. And so by the same token, the creating an intention around a planetary return carries more weight than it might compared to a daily ritual, unless you do that daily ritual daily, meaning that builds up its own weight, its own rhythm, its own. It's like doing yoga. When we do yoga, it's not about the half hour or 2 hours that we spend doing it. It's about doing it every day that creates a rhythm unto itself. And so from that standpoint, it's different. And by the way, Gail said that you accidentally said your Mars is in Cancer, which is why she asked about the Mars return. My Mars is in Aries. What I meant to say, if I misspoke, and unfortunately with the Gemini rising, I've misspoken my whole life on occasion. Yeah. And I meant to say that my moon is in Cancer. Yeah. So transiting Mars is squaring my natal Mars in Aries, and squaring my natal Mercury and squaring my natal Venus and squaring my natal Sun, and blah, 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 blah. But it's conjoining. It's coming up to conjoin my moon, Mars conjoining my moon. So thank you. Thank you, Gail. But by the way, the thing about the Saturn return, though, like any return, it's a moment where we get an inkling of what might be, for lack of a better word, called free will. That's why we state our intentions. At the solar return, it's like there's something happening, like at a new moon. The old cycle's done. The new cycle hasn't started. And if I ritualize at the new moon or hours after it, because most people agree that the new moon itself is still blank, you know, and that we want to catch the growing energy of the moon. So if we ritualize at the new moon, it's really healthy to repeat that ritual an hour later, 6 hours later, 12 hours later, a day later, and maybe 3 days later to build momentum on that energy. But the idea is that at that blankness of a planetary return, there's a potential for free will in operation. And it may be said that at our Saturn return, we have more free will in operation than at any other time in our life, although most of us don't realize it because we're feeling the heaviness, the weight of the pressure of having reached the top of the mountain. Here's the way I see it. I see that through our 20s, we're climbing a mountain. And as we get closer and closer to the summit of the mountain, we're getting closer and closer to our Saturn return. And as mountain climbers tell us that difficult mountains, the last few hundred yards are tougher than the entire rest of the climb, and that sometimes it's the last 100 steps, you know, that are the ones that are impossible, and yet something continues to drive us to get to the top. And so often when we're coming toward our Saturn return, even if we don't know any astrology, we're feeling the pressure of having to take responsibility, even if we don't know that's what the pressure is. We just may feel like our life is falling apart, things at work aren't going right, things in our relationship aren't going right, or maybe I don't have a relationship at all, or maybe I'm in a relationship where it's just not working for me or for the other person, perhaps one or the other or both, or maybe I'm dealing with physical issues, or maybe I'm dealing with addictions or things that have become parts of habits that are no longer working for me. Well, the thing is that you feel the weight. And as you get closer and closer to the top of the mountain, you actually, by the time you're at the top of the mountain, you can actually stand up and look around and say, where am I and where do I want to go? And whether we know it or not, we make a choice. And the choice we make is, which direction do we descend off the mountaintop? Do we go that way or do we go that way? Or maybe we go that way. And we make choices. And again, sometimes the choices seem to be made for us, because if we don't state and ritualize our intentions, they're just things happen and boom, we lose this. We have a kid. We, you know, don't do that. We go back to school. We do things without really giving them significance. But what happens is that weeks or months or years later, when we're in the jungle or crossing a stream and down in the thick of the woods, climbing down off that mountain, we realize, God, I should have gone off the mountain. And that's why the mid-30s can be so difficult, because often it's coming to realization, coming to realize that we made some decisions that maybe weren't the best decisions we could have made, and we need to readjust. And of course, we can't go back up to the top of the mountain and go down the other way. But sometimes we can alter our way around the mountain a bit. And this metaphor is actually a metaphor that works, because if we're aware of our Saturn return, rather than feeling the pressure to grow up and make decisions, it's about coming into our Saturn return. What can we do to take responsibility for where we are and what's happening to us, so that through our Saturn return, and if we're blessed by having it retrograde and have three times, well, then we try to do something on that first run. And then we think we're heading down the mountain, but we realize somehow we're still at the top of the mountain and we're not done making that decision yet. So we get more time to refine our decision, so, or decisions or life changes, so that by the time our Saturn return is over, hopefully we're more aligned with where we are going by having stood up and taken responsibility than just blaming everything on the circumstances that are unfolding around us.
Rick, have you seen, and is it your experience, that when people are aware of the energetic potential of their second Saturn return? So if there's a certain awareness, and maybe with the first Saturn return, they were aware or not. But then by the time we get to the second return, they're like, they know what the invitation is. Do you see or find that it's easier for them to navigate that second one or not?
Well, here's the magic of Saturn. I so want to say yes, but it's not always true. And I'll tell you what the difference is. Saturn, which is, remember, Latin for Kronos, which is Greek. If we have a Kronos-related condition, in other words, something that's chronic, the word chronic means of Kronos. And so something that's settled in continues to settle in. And so those things which are chronic in our lives tend to become more chronic unless we actually fight the stream of inactivity or unconsciousness. And how do we do that? We do it through yoga. We do it through therapy. We do it through meditation. We do it through changing circumstances in our lives that we can change. We do it by changing our attitude. Everyone has hundreds of ways in which this can be done. Which way works? Well, what works for you may not be what works or work for me. But the problem is that the second Saturn return can be a lot worse than the first one if we've let our life go further and further out of whack. But I just had this come up with an apprentice in my Patreon apprentice program this last week, where in talking with this particular apprentice coming back. It wasn't a Saturn return, but it was a Saturn transit to the moon, I think, or the sun to the moon, I think it was. And this is what I would have someone doing coming into their second Saturn return. I would say, all right, first of all, go back and figure out the first Saturn return, give it a year on either side, and begin to write What was the changes in your life back at the first Saturn return? What worked? What didn't work? What did you want to happen? What actually happened? What was the circumstances in your life post-Saturn return versus pre-Saturn return? And now look at what happened during the Saturn opening square, typically around age 35, 36. At that point in time, what were the issues that you were dealing with in your mid-30s? And then what were the issues that you were dealing with around the time of your Uranus opposition, which is around age 42, which is the Saturn, second Saturn opposition too? Because Saturn has a 30-year cycle or 29-year cycle. Typically, if our Saturn return happens at just before 30, our Saturn halfway cycle is going to happen at around age 42-ish, somewhere around there, Saturn plus, you know, 14 years, 43, 44, 45 even. What happened there? Then on the Saturn closing square, and now you've had a picture of this whole process. And for that matter, look in your life at what was going on around age seven and a half at the first opening square of Saturn. And then how about your adolescence around age 13, 14, 15, when Saturn was opposing your natal Saturn? And then out around age 21, when you were granted freedom, whatever that meant, and what was going on when Saturn was squaring your natal Saturn? Because it's not just about the conjunctions. That's just the most obvious. And the conjunction, like the new moon, is the moment of the black hole, of the emptiness, of the end has occurred and the beginning hasn't occurred. And that's when we get to make the most use of our stated intention, not through just thinking about it. It's not ask and you shall receive. It's not making a wish. It's not stating an intention. It's making a wish based upon our intention and then acting on it as if the intention was being fulfilled. That is what ritual is always about.
Okay. I have one more question. It's very important.
Well, good, because I only have one more answer.
Good. Okay. Very, very important. I mean, I have a million more questions, as I always do.
I have a million more answers, but we're not going here.
You mentioned earlier that you're almost at the legal limit of planets in Aries. What's the legal limit?
I don't know. Jeff Jauer, who was my astrology buddy and in partner in crime, Jeff used to just say, Rick has over the legal. Aries over the legal. Planets. There obviously is just was meant to be a smart ass saying, but I do have a fairly close conjunction of Mercury, Mars, Venus, Sun, Lilith, over 10 degrees.
Well, whatever you have, it's perfect.
On a good day, on a bad day, whatever I have sucks just as much as in your life or in your life. On a good day, it's perfect. On a bad day, it sucks. But the day that sucks is perfect too. We just don't know it.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much. This has been so helpful. I feel like we have an awesome snapshot of your perspective on solar returns and other planetary returns and how we can actually work with them in a powerful way, in an intentional way. If any of you have a birthday coming up, or if you want to book a reading for a birthday that's going to happen at some point, highly recommend booking it this month, because if you go to astrologyhub.com/connect, we are having our reading bonanza month, which is our grand opening of Astrologer Connect, which is our platform that connects you with some of the best astrologers in the world. Not Rick, because Rick is not totally accessible for readings at this point in his life, which is actually perfect. I actually feel like that is the way it should be.
Well, actually, the best shot that someone could have for getting a reading would be participating in the chart reading extravaganza that we're doing in the fall. Now, I know that's a bit out a ways, but that's probably the best chance, even though the odds there are still like winning the lottery.
But okay, if you're married to the idea of having a reading with Rick, that is true. You could probably, you have a chance of getting selected for the chart reading extravaganza part 3 in the fall, which we're going to be doing with Rick. But if you would like to have a reading with another amazing astrologer on the Astrologer Connect platform, go check them out. See if there's any that you'd want to have a reading with and book it in April, because when you book in April, you get 20% off. So even if your birthday is in June, you could book it now, but then have the
reading. And as amazing an astrologer as I appear to be, there are a lot of amazing astrologers.
That's the coolest thing ever. We keep finding more amazing astrologers. I always think we have to have met all the amazing astrologers.
You know, 10 years ago, I thought I knew all the cool astrologers. You know, now every day, every week goes by and someone appears who says, I've been doing astrology for, you know, 40 years and blah, 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 blah. And I just have never been part of the community. I just do it quietly. And I go, oh my God, another amazing astrologer. A lot of good astrologers.
Yes. So check it out. The code to get your discount this month is April 20. So go to astrologyapp.com/connect. Choose your astrologer. Book your reading.
Hey, that's 420. Is there any secret code here that we're,
No. No. It means April 20% off. But I like where your mind is. Okay, so you can do that. The other thing is, like we just mentioned, we are going to be having a chart reading extravaganza part 3. In the fall. Let's just like pencil it in your calendar. We don't have specifics yet. You can't register yet. But if you want to see the harmonics that Rick taught us in Astrology Foundations Level 3, if you want to see that come to life with live chart reading demos, that is going to be in the fall. So just again, like little pencil it in your calendar and it's coming. Anything else you want to announce, Rick?
Not that I can think of offhand. I'll see a lot of you next month at NORWAC, at the Northwest Astrology Conference. Yeah. I understand that you guys are going to be there, or some of you guys.
We're going to be there. I'm going to be there. I cannot wait to see you again, Rick. And any of you who are going to NORWAC, the astrology conferences are the best. Like after ESAR, the last one, I've actually been like in a little bit of a depression. That's the only.
It's postpartum depression. I mean, even after the small conference I was at last week in the Azores Islands, you know, it's still, you leave being so connected with people and it's like, you know, it's like, oh, what happened? Hey, by the way, there is one thing I want to mention, and I don't think this is stepping on any toes or anything, but many of you already know who watch my monthly know that I'm going to be doing a 10-day retreat called Initiation into Astrology in Goa, India on December 6th. Through the 16th. And it's at a place that's an Ayurvedic healing center in the south of Goa. A lot of people call Goa India Light. It's a very easy India to be a part of. And it's at a place that I've taught at before that's absolutely magical, on a beach that is amazing. And it is going to fill up. And so registration is open and complete details are available. Heaven and Earth Workshops. Heaven and Earth Workshops, all one word, heavenandearthworkshops.com, and go to Goa or Astrology Retreat and you can find out more. And I hope I didn't step any bounds saying.
Hey, are you kidding me? That sounds amazing. Go.
And it's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing.
You have a chance to do that with Rick. Like, that sounds incredible. How many people are you taking?
There'll be a limit of about 40. We already have about, this is in December. We already have about 20 people signed and paid up. So it'll sell out. But there'll be a lot of astro drama, experiential astrology. I mean, it'll be 10 days with one day off of excursions where we go to an organic herb or an organic spice plantation. This place is amazing. They grow black pepper and ginger and I mean, it's just crazy, an amazing place. We go to one of the largest outdoor markets in the world. That's just also amazing. It's a full 10 days. A lot of people who are coming a few days early or staying a few days after. The place is very magical. I stayed there for 2 weeks after it last time I taught and did Ayurvedic treatments every day. It was so cool. I can't wait to be there again. HeavenandEarthWorkshops.com.
Yes.
You can always email me anytime at rlevine, R-L-E-V-I-N-E, rlevine@starIQ.com, and I can get you more information or answer questions. So thanks for the opportunity to I'd say,
are you kidding me, Rick? That sounds amazing. That's awesome. I'm so
happy. You should come. You should come.
I know. I'm like, wait, I kind of want to go. That's
really more fun. More fun than Norwalk.
I'll bring Madeline. You're little.
Okay.
Yeah. Madeline's my 14-year-old. Okay. Thank you so much for everything today, Rick. Thanks to all of you for being here. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you for all of your great questions. Thank you for being curious and interested. And just thank you for being a part of our community. And as always, for making astrology a part of your life. We'll look forward to seeing you for the Cosmic Connection in a couple of weeks. And in the meantime, if you have not yet subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe and also hit the notification bell so that you are notified whenever we do a live video here on the channel and or whenever we release new episodes. So looking forward to connecting with all of you again very soon. And Rick, of course, you as well. And take care. See you soon.